to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, borderlining on Fukushima, Costco, freaking... Oh, my God, there's so many things that are taking over this country right now. It's extraordinary. Today I was supposed to have Albert Burgess on from the UK, but unfortunately... is nowhere to be found. So, call lines are open, ladies and gentlemen. The number is 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. I had a guest on the show last week who really didn't like it, you know? Really didn't like it. Some kind of, what was I described as? Some kind of... bad, lazy stoner, basically some kind of a stoner that's just not funny. And, you know, it's fair enough. It's true, isn't it? I'm just not funny. If you're not willing to laugh, of course. You know, what am I supposed to do here? I'm supposed to please everyone, but as everybody says, you can't please anyone. Oh, you can't please everyone, sorry. So let's think about this. How do you do a format for a show that everybody can get in on and nobody's closed off by? And I'm acting out of the assumption that you can't. You can only have one that everybody can be let in on and everybody can be closed off by. It's the duality of the relationship. So we have on people who are, well, researchers from... way back, who got their head stuck into, say, UFOs or consciousness exploration or some esoteric ethereal crapola, blah, 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 all the way over here. And then you have engineers and former Justice Department officials, World Bank employees, things like that, dealing with all the, yep, here's the reality that actually physically exists that we can absolutely 100% prove and be comfortable with right here type of thing. So we've got that spectrum. So it means that anybody who's into all the ethereal type stuff, which I am to a large degree, can sometimes be switched off and bored by, perhaps, is that the word, by the normal information. And likewise, those who are sitting there wanting to talk about this bank and that bank and this set of tyranny and what have you and the other, they'll be switched off by anything talking about ancient archaeology or off-world entities or non-physical entities or basically anything that ain't in this very well-defined 3D universe that they've been taught in school. Anything outside of that becomes a little bit of, you're damaging your credibility here. Now, I've always seen a lot of radio show hosts try to balance this. You know, they'll pick a subject and they'll stick to it. Like you say, take Kerry Cassidy, for instance. The amazing people with esoteric knowledge and secret underground stuff that would make your hair stand on end if it were true and all of that kind of stuff. Sticks in there, and you take other people on other networks who just stick to the economic stuff, and they go into a little bit of the occult and all of that kind of stuff there, but ultimately they avoid topics like Israel and various other things because it can get messy. All right, it's about wide, broad appeal, and I understand that mentality. However, I don't share it. I don't like the idea of specializing. I don't like the idea of closing off your mind to anything. I don't like the idea of doing stuff just because it's what other people are comfortable with. I don't like the idea of going through the same process with a very closed-minded mentality about what you can and can't do with the radio program because you might offend the sponsors and blah, 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 blah. So let's think about this. Is it possible then for anybody to actually have a radio show that is truly 100% balanced without offending everybody? I think it's not possible. Every single diehard fan to the show who I've spoken to has at least once heard a guest on the show who they loathe intensely. But being of mature, sound, reasonable mind, they understand that the format of the show is that every guest every day is pretty much different, and you'll probably, in a lot of cases, not hear the same voice twice. The whole idea of that is not actually something that I came up with. It's something that just happened. The listeners have given me so many suggestions for guests that I determined out of the amount of time it takes to get them on the show that I do not have the resources, the staff, or the capacity, really, or the patience, for that matter, to research into who these people are, what their websites are, what they're really about, whether or not they're COINTELPRO, have they been on other people's radio shows before, are they really huge guests, are they really small guests, have they never been on radio? I don't know anything. I've had to cut that section out, and as a result, it opens me up to not only the listeners being offended by the people that wind up on the show, because, you know, I don't know. Maybe if I had known, I'd cancel them out. Probably not, you know. Even people who I think are absolutely nuts. And there have been a few people on the show who I have personally thought was not only wrong, but completely insane, right? And there are other people that I've had on the show who I thought were cool, and I thought we did a good show with, but later on turn out to, well, just instantly slap me in the face kind of thing and just say that I'm whatever the criticism is. I'm too unprofessional. I'm too flippant. I degrade the conversation with laughter. I have a high-pitched, whiny voice. You know, there's innumerable things that have been critiqued about me that I must admit are all true. There's never been a serious bit of criticism that's been leveled against me that isn't true. Whether or not the criticism is in fact labeling something that's bad or something that's interpretational is something different. For example, laughing maniacally. I do that from time to time on the show. Some people don't like it. Other people, on the other hand, they find it hilarious. And as do I. So I'm doing it because I enjoy it. Talking to people who I never have no idea who they are. Some people don't like that. I really enjoy it. So I do it. You start to see what I'm saying here? This is my show, and I'm doing what I enjoy doing. If you do not enjoy it with me, if you do not enjoy the wonderful variety that life has, if you do not enjoy laughing and having a good time amidst these harsh realities we must face, please don't listen to the show. Don't message me on Facebook and YouTube and personally insult me with or label me with innuendo or labels like disinfo or moron or any of these other eclectic insults that have been leveled at me. You know why I'm telling you not to insult me? Because you can't do anything to me. You've never been in a room full of 31 kids, including yourself, and having 29 of them giving you verbal abuse all day long for being fat. You've had to deal with that. What do you think you can do to me? You've never been accused of racism and then suspended on school for doing literally nothing. You've never gone around to all of the other kids just going, I never said anything of the sort. And they were all there. And they all said that, yes, I had made a racist statement when I was telling, when I was trying to have a conversation about what racism actually is and how different people express their racism. That was interpreted by one of the people at the table as me being racist. So I got suspended for 3 days of school for having a conversation about that. Has that happened to you? I fracking doubt it. What do you think you can do to me? You've never been assaulted by your father several times and been ignored for the first 27 years of your life, and then he dies and then has like these millions of dollars of assets and stuff and trust and everything like that that I can never touch, basically being disowned before I even reach the age of 9. I'm never even given a chance. That's not happened to you. What do you think you can do to me? You haven't had $10,000 worth of your gear stolen out of your flat by your flatmates who you thought you could trust just because you went away for the weekend. What do you think you can do to me? You haven't been assaulted by people, and then when you call the cops and stuff like that, the cops come and then push you around. You know? I don't understand why people think that they know anything about me. I don't understand why people believe that by attacking me, they can accomplish anything. It greatly offends me when people insult me. It greatly offends me when people say things about me that are not true. Because I have gone through stuff that most people don't have to and shouldn't have to. And that doesn't mean that I'm superior to you. It just means that I'm a little bit hardier and I won't put up with any of that crap anymore because I know it and I recognize it. Just like somebody in an activist situation would start to recognize tyranny, start to recognize lies, start to recognize violence, start to recognize elitism, calling people the sheeple, having disrespect for the human condition, having a mentality that other people are inferior to you in some way and not wanting to help them and instead making an excuse about why you can't and sitting at home and playing video games and hoping that will wake people up instead. That is not what I do. Everybody who comes to me for help, I try to help them as best I can, but the second that they tell me that some kind of an insult, if it's not out of, you know, pure constructive criticism, block you on Skype, block you on Facebook, bounce your emails. I ain't even talking to you again. You're not the kind of person I want in my life. Do you understand, ladies and gentlemen? I've gone through crap because I was stupid. And I trusted people too much. And when they betrayed me, I continued to trust them instead of purging them from my life. This is what we all have to kind of understand, is the way that people who are affected by the system in a negative way, okay, whether or not they got a pin on themselves because of the crap that happened to them or such and such and so forth. Everybody's got a monkey on their back for some reason. It's either my life is your fault or something of similar nature. Those are the kind of toxic people who bring you down. And I have become acutely aware of this type of mentality and just how much it actually unsettles me. I do not feel comfortable knowing people like that, or being around them, or reading their comments so they get purged. And I never have to deal with that one individual again. And yet, I am certain that another individual just like them, because they're all a big archetype, all these damaged goods people who have nothing really positive to say or do in their own life, they come out and they find everybody else who is a burning candle of light and energy, and they try to suck it from you like a black hole. Get yourself out of the gravitational pull of these people is what my mind told me. And so that's exactly what I've been doing. And sure enough, it's like panhandling. You're sieving through all those little bits of grit and dirt and sand. And the only thing that seems to be left in my social circle of friends now are these incredible nuggets of gold that are so valuable that I was grateful that I did panhandling and got rid of those grits and sand in the first place so I could really see and have time to appreciate the gold that's really out there in people. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And I'd like people to call in if they can. The number is 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525 is the number to call. And you can also join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Just search Vinnie Eastwood Chat on an NSA search engine. You should find it. Back in.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm writers and critics who prophesize with your
pen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
And keep your eyes wide.
Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And usually on... usually in the case of elections, you get told by one or two of the candidates at the same time on occasions that they're going to change things. And sure enough, they're always correct. And shit gets a hell of a lot worse. Apologize to the affiliates for the use of that language there. Probably shouldn't have done that. But that's precisely what's coming out of these people's mouths all the time. Just this worrying cascade of diuretic consumption of the masses. This intellectual feeding tube of recycled urinary tract infection, speech writer, conjunctivitis, eyeball, tripe. It's just disgusting at the best of times to see how disingenuous, how just plain cavalier and the gall that is exuded from these individuals that are up on those podiums, and the stupidity, the blindness, and the inability to even source information of their followers. You have people that are members of mainstream political parties. These people are practically knuckle draggers. They're simply unevolved, politically speaking. They have not yet had their awakening. They go out, take part in debates that they think are real, but they are not. They go out and tell people policy changes that they think are going to help them, but they will not. Such is their stupidity that they will blindly parrot and puppet everything that they are given to do. Now, this is not entirely dissimilar from a radio show host or talking head. And I include myself in this, and I don't know, anybody else who wants to put their hand up and admit that you are a talking head and you don't know what you're talking about half the time. I don't. Okay? If I knew what I was talking about, I'd be getting interviewed on other people's shows about specific topics and stuff like that. But because I don't know what I'm talking about, I got given a radio show host position. Okay? That's how it works. All right, no. I don't mean to rag on it. But what happens as a Or at least in the position where you're being given information. Like the captain of a sea ship, I think. One of our listeners from Trinidad, Robert, said this the other night. And I said that was absolutely true because I was admitting straight out that I don't know what I'm doing, okay? But I'm still doing it a hell of a lot better than 99% of the other people out there. And it's because I admit that I don't know what I'm doing that basically other people come and they fill in the blanks, right? Think about this. Sea captain, what does he do on the ship most of the time? Nothing, unless there's a decision to be made. And think about a president. How much direct first-hand knowledge with any of these international incidents and things of that nature is he intricately familiar with? None of them. That's why he's got advisors. And so in a similar position here, you understand that, I don't know anything, but if the time comes to make a decision, I'm going to have to take advice from this person, this person, this person, this person, and then try and come up with a decision. The difficulty being, of course, that when you make decisions, those decisions have consequences. And when those decisions have consequences, you best be making sure that you take ownership and responsibility for the choices you have made, because you're the captain of the ship. You are the one who is held accountable for it running into the fracking rocks. Politicians, on the other hand, do not seem to carry such a burden, do they? Oh, Barack Obama inherited some kind of bad political situation from the previous administration, so he had to make it worse. He didn't have any choice. Are you fracking kidding me? Shut the frack up. Okay? That's what I feel like saying to these people who are apologists for their own enslavement. Oh, you've got to give Caesar a chance, okay? He's only enslaved us for the last 30 years. Maybe the next 5 years or something like that, when he promises he'll set us free, will be true. No, 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 no. You idiot. You're an idiot, and you should shut the frack up, okay? Lie down before you hurt yourself, because you're putting yourself to a fracking meat grinder, you numbskull. Here's a gun, go over to the other side of the world and guard some heroin poppies. Okay? That's what they'd really be telling you if the army recruiters had any fracking honesty. But they do not, because honesty is not something that the political game or system or geopolitics in any way, shape or form is particularly fond of. Why? Because honesty prevents a lot of illegal business from being done. And we had a conversation the other day about what is violence. Okay, where does it start? What is it, blah, blah, blah. So, for example, a girl says that, before the first Gulf War, of course, that Iraqi soldiers had walked into a maternity ward or whatever, and they had taken babies out of incubators and killed them. She was crying, and there was, and it never happened. And she was a actress, young actress, daughter of a frickin' Saudi Arabian ambassador or something, just sitting there lying on TV to convince people that it's a good idea to go out and kill people. Right? Now, if you lie and you're in a courtroom and you're given testimony, it's called perjury and you go to jail for a long time, don't you? If you are a president, and you illegally, against international law, invade a country that has not aggressed you, that is illegal. It's called war crimes under the Geneva Convention. You were supposed to go to jail for a long time. If you murder somebody and you have not just cause in a battle zone or outside of a battle zone, that is illegal. And you can be either court-martialed or executed or anything like that. All the bad behavior that we see going all over the world is already illegal. The problem is that the people who enforce those laws, the people who jail the people who break them, are the criminals now. They've bought out the institutions that would enforce the laws against them. So now whenever anybody wants to go and get help from any type of authority, they would realize that the authorities are all one. One world government. Imagine a world where you could not question authority anymore because it's simply too powerful. That would really suck. Cop comes up to you. illegally pulls you over for no reason, smashes through your window with his nightstick, drags you out of the car, beats you up on the side of the highway, without even saying anything or so much as showing his badge. And then he cuffs you, puts you in the back of his car, takes you along the side of the highway, shoots you in the head, and buries you in a ditch. Okay? Imagine that just happened to somebody you know. And apparently this has happened before, you know? Particularly, I think there was one case that I heard where three black teenagers were pulled over by a sheriff in Texas or Louisiana or something. And it was even on video, okay? He just executed all three of them. Bang, bang, bang. They just fell down the ditch and they just walk away. You know? Total fracking psychopathy. Nothing was done about it. Okay? You hear stories about... I believe there was this black police officer in Oklahoma City who was a hero of the day kind of thing. Saved many, many lives. And he was found kind of like his beaten basically half to death. Just real horrific torture situation, okay? Meters from his patrol car. He was a cop. And he gets pulled over by people, and then they fracking kill him in a field, tied to a tree. And it wasn't a quick death either. This is what happens to heroes. This is what happens to those who stand out for the truth, who don't ask for help. When you want to commit a crime, that crime has to be kept basically unaware to everybody. Everybody. Okay, nobody can know that you're committing a crime if you want to get away with it. That's basically the rules of the game, isn't it? I mean, you ask, I think Barry Cooper of Never Get Busted Again says if you've got a grow operation, the amount of people that you tell about that grow operation is directly correspondent with your likelihood of getting busted. For every person you tell about the fact that you've got a grow, the likelihood of you getting arrested for it goes up by 10%. So if you tell 10 people, you got 100% likelihood of getting busted, baby. All right, that is the game that we're playing here. That is how the conspirators work. They ensure 100% of the time, well, for any one of their crimes, that they control the investigative authority. For instance, if they wish to kidnap one of your children and sexually molest them, as happens more often than one would wish to know about, okay, 400,000 kids go missing a year in the US, never seen again, 100,000 in the UK. I don't know how much it is in New Zealand or Australia. But the child protective racket is essentially just child trafficking. Okay, so somebody comes up from CPS and goes, Child Protective Services, you've been a bad parent, blah, 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 you're supposed to be there to help them, right? That's the authority that you would go to in the case of bad parenting, isn't it? But in actual fact, it is the authority that ensures that children can be readily taken off of good parents, particularly innocent children and stuff like that, And more or less just passed around like a bag of Oreos to the local elite, you know, nurses, doctors, lawyers, chiefs of police, the mayor, etc. And this is the same scheme in England as it is here, and as it is in the United States, everywhere. Okay, everywhere has this exact same scheme. That's why it's obviously a global conspiracy. Because if it wasn't a global conspiracy, there would be some kind of point of difference to the methodologies that are being operated upon. There isn't. There is, firstly, the program to kidnap your kids by controlling the government agency that can do it legally. Those enforcement officers have more power, I'm not joking, than police officers. If that person walks into a house and steals your kid, well, the kid's going, no, don't take me away. And the mother's going, please don't take my child, you know. And it's obvious that kid's being fracking kidnapped. the cop can only stand there and cry, as has happened here in New Zealand. A lovely lady that I met named Pippa, that happened to her kid. See? Same methodology. You have an unquestionable authority that just takes the kids, and then when you go to get help, you have the authorities who are already on the take, who are there to ensure that you get discouraged from continuing your investigations further and trying to get to the bottom of what's going on here. That's the real scary part about it, is you'll go to a doctor and the doctor will be on the CPS's side. You're like, hold on, what the hell's going on here? I wonder what the doctor's cut is. You go to the sheriff. The sheriff suddenly just doesn't want to hear from you. He does not returning your phone calls and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden you get an eviction notice and you're being kicked out of your house. All right? If you fight your child's being kidnapped and raped, you have your life destroyed. And this happens over and over and over again, everywhere you look. It's real sick. And that's the real harshest topic that we've ever kind of gone into the show, is the global kidnapping rings that are out there and how they're really operating, and just to the extent that it's happening as well. You are, statistically speaking, 5 times more likely, allegedly, to be sexually abused while you're inside Child Protective Services custody than outside with any bad parent you could ever conceive of. Okay? 5 times more likely. They're that bad. And it's so obvious. We have a friend of mine, Dan Ryder. He has recordings of SIFS workers here, Child, Youth and Family, equivalent of CPS. Saying that if you give me $40,000, I'll give you your kid back. Okay? We have workers saying, yeah, about half of the people that we got working for us have wet dreams over the kids. You know? They directly employ pedophiles. And you wonder why the system's so fracked up? You wonder why people don't get what they want when they go to any bureaucracy for anything? It's because the whole thing is stitched up. It doesn't matter which direction you point. You can play teddy bear, turn around with a blindfold on, and wherever you end up looking in any measure of the government, you will see a horrific conspiracy. We'll be right back.
Some scumbaggery,
etc. Welcome back, everybody. Right. You know what the interesting thing is about American Freedom Radio? Is it's just such a nice network to be on. All the hosts that we have on here and that continue to stay on here are cool people. All right? Not judgmental, not high maintenance, that kind of thing. Just totally fracking cool. And I put that down to the decision-making and the experience of none other than Danny Romero, who runs the show here. Not the show, but you know what I mean. AmericanFreedomRadio.com. A lot of people don't know who Danny Romero is. They really don't. And I advise you, man, if you ever want to talk to a truther, like a truther who's like the truther, you know, that's one of those people. The kind of person who's never betrayed anybody. Kind of person who is always overwhelmingly positive. But the kind of person who makes the hard decisions when it's necessary. You know, that's the kind of person you want to be talking about, following and listening to in the truth movement. And there's a lot of that archetype out there. People who are incredibly helpful, busy, etc., who are more than willing to do what's necessary in order to get the truth out, regardless of what situation it puts them in. You know, this is what we all have to realize, is there is no victory without sacrifice. If the hard decisions have to be made, then by goodness, you've got to make them, and you've got to sacrifice whatever's necessary in order to get that job done, mate. All of us in the truth movement who have shows and being part of the media game, basically, this is what the alleged truth, and people don't even like the label truth movement. Just seekers of truth. How about, you know, in New Zealand, we have a term called GC. Not the GC, but if you're being a GC, then you're definitely a bit of a GC. It's a very disgusting word, and yet it means something positive, essentially. And that's what I find is happening over here at American Freedom Radio. And that's why I think everybody really needs to kind of get the word out about it as well. You know, if you stumble across something, a gem like this network, I'd never even heard of it until basically being offered a co-hosting position. I think that's really upsetting because I'd heard of a lot of the other networks, not this one. This is like the best of the lot, to be honest. Not being arrogant about it or anything like that, because I listen to the other people's shows that are on here, you know, a good mix of women and men, a good mix of geographical locations, perspectives and backgrounds, and yet all arriving at the same conclusion. Try to be a GC, all right? It doesn't matter how angry everybody else is or how negative, etc. Just allow those people to kind of go off and do whatever they want to. Everybody ends up exactly where they deserve to be, all right? Everybody. And it is much better, instead of attacking the people who have done you wrong, to simply make and build something better from that wrong that was done to you, okay? And make that other person look bad by comparison. That's what this network is about. It's about making those who don't really care about the truth, who in actual fact are in it for their own egos and their own agendas, those people who don't appreciate others for their innate value as free human beings, those people who do not really truly embody the principles of liberty and freedom upon which the Constitution of the United States was founded, not through to its logical conclusion. The people that are willing to give everything just for everybody else, that's the kind of network this is. I feel humbled, like, seriously. I am well outside the norm here. I mean, anybody know any other New Zealander in the whole planet who's got a radio show like this on an American network? Don't think so. And that's just down to American Freedom Radio, not me. All right, well, we have our guest finally arrived here, Albert. Welcome, mate. Albert, are you there?
I'm here.
Apparently he's not here. You can't hear me, can you, Albert? Okay. All right. We're going to in the background there. I'm just going to make sure to hang up on him and try and reconnect him in. If the studio's listening, could you please try and reconnect Albert in there? Thank you. That'd be nice. And I think what the whole point about this is that despite the fact that it's called American Freedom Radio, I'm a New Zealander and I'm on it, we've got Albert here who's from the UK. Albert, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Welcome to the show, brother. And we were just talking about how American Freedom Radio is such a fabulous network and how it's kind of really kind of putting the right stuff into the global resistance. And that doesn't entirely take away from you coming on the show right now. And I'd love it, Albert, if you would. We've got a few minutes before going to break here. If you just got a preface for the people listening, just who you are and what you do, and then we'll proceed with the info, all the info that you want to put out in the next segment.
Yeah, I mean, basically, my name's Albert Burgess. I spent 12 years as a special constable in England, and I 6 years ago, I was given some documents which I was told were of historical interest. And when I actually sat down to read them, I realised that not only were they of extreme historical interest, they were actually evidence that the British government under Edward Heath had set up a conspiracy designed to subvert the English Constitution, which is a major crime of sedition at common law. And at the level they were doing this, an act of high treason against the English Constitution. And that set me on a hectic learning curve, really, about the English Constitution, about treason, and about what was going on in the country today. Hello?
Yeah. Well, just thinking about the whole concept of treason is almost alien to people. And you know what it reminds me of, Albert? There's a friend of mine named Tim Selwyn, and he was party to a fireman's axe going through the front window of the then Prime Minister and now a third highest level at the UN, Helen Clark. And he got charged with sedition in New Zealand. And we were like, what?
Well, yeah, but you see, if you use violence to attempt to force government to change its policies, that is the legal definition of sedition. If you attempt to use undue pressure to force government to change their policies, that is sedition. But there are other types of sedition. And it's unlike the ruling of the Canadian judge who said that there must be an overt act of violence before you can be charged with sedition. That's not true, because Edward Heath set out to subvert the English Constitution. He did it by lies and deception. And in fact, there was no violence whatsoever there.
So he could not be charged with sedition, but he could be charged with treason. Is that the definition?
Well, no, he could be charged with sedition. The fact of the matter is, the Canadian ruling, whilst it might be mildly interesting in England, it doesn't actually have any authority in England. Because Canada is, although it's a Commonwealth country, it is a separate country, with its own government, its own set of rules, and they don't necessarily apply over here. In fact, they don't apply over here.
Well, I want to also talk about the issue of how the impending British legal system is also basically impeding on national sovereignty as well, because we share the same legal system the world over to a large degree, don't we, Albert? And if it's corrupt at the core, it'd certainly be corrupt at the seams, wouldn't it?
Well, the short answer to that is that quite a large part of the world does have common law jurisdiction, in that it's all based on English common law. All of the Commonwealth countries, for example, do.
All right, Albert, we're coming to break now. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
virus, alert the masses.
Gentlemen, now hour one, number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, most fabulous little network in the world, in the Schwarzenegger sense of the word. My very special guest, Albert Burgess, joins us live from the dark and scary Uber Kingdom, which is dominated by some of the most ruthless, sociopathic, treasonous, scum, filth pieces of trash you can never conceive of in your life. And it makes it very important because this is kind of where the empire started. So maybe it might be a place where we can end it as well by exposing the treasonous actions of certain members of parliament and what have you, and the course that the country's going in, as is all the rest of us, because it's a global conspiracy, perhaps can be stopped or re-plotted, as it were. And speaking of plotting, I had a great idea. A great idea for a protest. It's called the Treason for Treason protest. Okay? And you think about how many acts of treason your government and your scumbaggery politicians have committed over the last couple of years or something, or even over the last month probably. There'll still be quite a few. You probably plant a forest, you know? Get in there with your shovels and your little trees and stuff like that, and just plant those trees right on Parliament grounds. The treason for treason. And just show how many acts of treason have been committed. How about you just wrap a ribbon around each and every one of those trees with a little piece of paper or a flashcard or something like that, with the particular act that has been violated and the instance and the court date or something of that nature. So people could literally walk through a forest of treason on Parliament grounds and find out just how horrible things had really gotten in your country. That'd be great. I'd love to see it. But unfortunately, yeah. Don't have that many shovels or trees handy.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it? basically, we're having a bit of success at the moment in England. What we're doing, the government set out in the days of Asquith, and Asquith in 1911 made this perfectly plain, that he wanted to see the House of Lords destroyed completely and removed. The reason for that is that the hereditary peerage who sat in the House of Lords were invariably looking after the interests of the whole country, and in particular, the working man. And that didn't suit the House of Commons, who really you would think, being working men themselves, or certainly middle-class men themselves, would appreciate the fact that they have to look after the working man. They don't. They are trying to destroy everything that's good in this country. In order to do that, they have to destroy the working man as well as anything else. And one way they chose to do that was to remove the protections that the working man had, which largely hung out in the House of Lords with the hereditary peers. So what happened in 1999 was Tony Blair, the Prime Minister, put through what called the 1999 House of Lords Act, which actually threw out all but 92 of the hereditary peers out of the House of Lords. Now, this, of course, has interfered in the cognizance of the House of Lords to decide who sits in it, and that cognizance can't be interfered with by anybody at all. Not even the Queen can interfere with it. And in fact, the House of Commons is specifically under the law refused permission to interfere with it, and indeed the House of Lords is refused permission to interfere in the cognizance of the House of Commons as to who sits in it. So this was in fact a major attack on the House of Lords, which in order to get it through, they had to intimidate and overawe the hereditary peerage, which they succeeded in doing. However, This gave them a somewhat of a problem, and we've picked up on the problem that they have, and we're actually reporting the crimes they committed when they did it. The cognizance of the Houses of Parliament to conduct their own business in their own way and determine who sits in them is, in fact, a common law cognizance. And, in fact, what's happening is that we are reporting Anthony Linton Blair, Nick Clegg, the Deputy Prime Minister, and David Cameron, the current Prime Minister, to the police for the common law offence of high treason by actually interfering in the cognizance of the House of Lords to determine its own business, its own way, and who sits in it, because Clegg and Cameron want to shut the place down and, in fact, put out a House of Lords cessation bill in order to do that. That's been put on the back burner because the members of Parliament refused, the Tory members of Parliament refused to support it. Nevertheless, it was their intention, and their intention was treasonable. The other thing that they're doing is, because they are intimidating and overawing the House of Lords, the House of Commons are doing that, that in fact is an offence under Sections 2 and 3 of the 1848 Treason Felony Act. So we are in fact reporting them under that act as well. What we've done is we have decided to run an email campaign from the comfort of everybody's home. And so what's happened is that people email me, and I forward their email on to my two principal lieutenants, a man called Jack and another man called Rex. They supply all the relevant details, such as the email addresses of every chief constable in the country and the information necessary to report the crime. And then I've got a group so far, it's about 100 at the moment and growing. On a weekly basis, it's growing. And what we're doing is we're reporting these offences of treason against the House of Lords to the police. So far, we've had six police forces in this country. Five police forces in the country have actually given this a crime number and, in fact, have forwarded it to London to be investigated, because the Metropolitan Police and City of London Police are in a better position to investigate members of Parliament, because they actually are in the same part of the world. And Wiltshire Police have forwarded it to the Home Office and the Crown Prosecution Service to ask for a ruling on the law. Now, the Home Office and the Crown Prosecution Service have had this now for probably about 6 weeks. And they are positively, absolutely refusing to answer the questions that Wiltshire Police are asking them, which in fact means that they don't want to answer the questions, because if they answer the question, they're going to tell Wiltshire Police that, yes, the law is very good and the crimes have actually been committed. And that means Wiltshire Police can then go out and arrest government ministers like the Prime Minister, and that would be somewhat embarrassing for them. So they are actually sitting on their hands over that. However, Wiltshire Police's crime recording officer will be attending, I think, on the 19th of September, a conference of crime recording officers, which is a national conference. So the crime recording officers from all 42 police forces, apart from the ones in London, will be at this. Well, in fact, the ones in London will be there, but the all 42 county forces will be represented. And the Wiltshire Police crime recording officer has said that they will, in fact, extract a ruling out of the representatives from the Home Office and the CPS who are at that conference. Now, that's particularly good for us, because if we can get a ruling at that conference that these things are real crimes and the law that we are using is really good law, which it is, we know it is, we've had it checked by a barrister, excellent law. And if we can do that, then it means that every crime recording officer from every police force in the country will go back to his police force and will hopefully, having had it cleared by the Home Office and the Crown Prosecution Service, then issue a crime book number and record it as a crime. which they will then forward to the Metropolitan Police and City of London Police. That puts the Metropolitan Police in particular in a very difficult position, because if you've got 42 chief constables in the country are saying to the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, look, this is a crime which we have had reported to us, we have recorded it as a crime, but you are better placed to investigate it, that name means, so we've transferred it to you. That makes it extraordinarily difficult for the Commissioner of Metropolitan Police not to start a full criminal investigation into the allegations, because all 42 chief constables who are nominally on a par with him are saying this is a crime, deal with it. And that's what we are trying to do, to bring pressure on the Metropolitan Police through the county police forces in order that we can actually force the Metropolitan Police into a position where they have to go out and arrest Anthony Linton Blair, one-time Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, and charge him with high treason contrary to the common law of England and the cognizance of the House of Lords to conduct its own business its own way, and that includes who sits in it. And, of course, Nick Clegg, the Deputy Prime Minister, who is also, down to be sorted out for the same offences, as indeed is David Cameron. And I think there'd be very few people in this world who would actually object to Tony Blair being dragged off kicking and screaming in handcuffs. And I suspect probably not many fewer who would actually be quite chuffed to see David Cameron being dragged out of Downing Street in handcuffs. And that's what we are aiming for, because we want our country back. And in order to get it back...
When they did this in Iceland, they literally, what was it, like a couple of hundred people maybe even, something like that, just basically stormed Parliament, grabbed them and threw them out physically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what we don't want to storm Parliament and drag them and throw them out physically. We want the police to go in, and we want the police to go in there with a bucket full of handcuffs and just handcuff the various people. I mean, for example, we've just, I've certainly just supplied the case, which has been checked by a barrister and is very, very good case, over John Major when he went to Maastricht and came back and said the Queen is now a citizen of Europe. Mm. Now, we have a constitutional law on that, which says that the Queen is the supreme governor of England, and that the Crown of England takes second place to nobody. So she's now being made a vassal queen to Europe, which is high treason against the Crown of England. And we've now had the case written up, and it does say it's been checked out by a barrister who agrees fully with everything we've done and said we've done a really good job on it. And that is being presented to the police. I've already sent mine off to the Metropolitan Police, but that also will be going to every chief constable in order to see if we can't arrange for the arrest of John Major, Francis Maude, who was one of the signatories of the Maastricht Treaty, and Douglas Hurd. And I've just picked up John Major's autobiography. I already have Douglas Hurd's autobiography. And I sat down and I read the section on Maastricht in John Major's autobiography, and I did something which I never ever do with books, because I love books. I don't think we should ever deface a book. I actually went through it with a highlighter, and I highlighted the name of every civil servant who went to Maastricht, because they've all conspired with John Major, Francis Maude, and Douglas Hurd to actually commit high treason against Her Majesty, contrary to the 1351 Treason Act and the 1559 Act of Supremacy, by making her a vassal queen to Europe. They've also, because they made every one of us a subject of Europe, a citizen of Europe, which again they can't do, that is highly illegal. So we're reporting them for the same offence, high treason against it, but this time against the English Constitution, and contrary to the Bill of Rights of 1689 and English common law. So So basically, we are just going to be burying the police alive, really, under allegations of treason. Hopefully, they will get the message that the easiest thing they can do, because we are not going away, I have to tell you, we are not going away. We're not going to bury our heads in a corner and be quiet. We are doing this, and the police have nowhere to go to get at us, because we are quoting real law, genuine law. It is written down in books, so we have the law, we have the history, we have the common law of England as well, supporting what we are doing, and the police can't possibly arrest us for actually saying this is the law, uphold it. So they have nowhere to go with us, and we're not going to give them any peace. And the path of least resistance for the police here is actually to think, well, sod this, if we want a quiet life, we should go out and arrest all these members of parliament that these people are complaining about and charge them with treason. So that is basically the plan, and it is, we are making progress. As I say, we've had five police forces have actually crimed it. We make everybody personally responsible for their own actions. Cambridgeshire Police Chief Constable, for example, refused to crime it.
Can I say this? It sometimes takes just a few people have got real guts to kind of stand up, like if you've got like a controversial question that's being asked to a group of people or something like that, and people are asked to raise their hands. It's just those first few tentative ones who raise their hand and go, yep, I agree with you, and they think that they're going to be judged. But everybody else starts raising their hands as well, and soon enough you realise that everybody's kind of actually in agreement the whole time. They just didn't know that they could be in agreement safely. And That's perhaps what keeps some professionals maybe from coming forth and actually standing up and attempting to slay and or expose this kind of scumbaggery. And the question about going in with a bucket of handcuffs and arresting them, what then? Because as far as I know, the court system's rather corrupt. How would you ensure a right, fair and proper trial based on the evidence?
Well, I mean, basically, once we get it to trial, because of the nature of the crimes, it would have to have a jury. It would be a jury trial. So the judge, in fact, is there simply to say what the law is. He's not there actually to judge the case. The judging of the case is done by the jury. And what we would say is that because this is a question of English constitutional law and the future of
Albert, England, we're coming to break. We're coming to break now. Albert Burgess, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
It's been a long time.
But I'm here now.
We are here now.
So what you wanna do?
Now, that's the interesting thing, man. It has been a long time coming. There's been a lot of scumbaggery committed for a very long time and a whole lot of people that have been very oppressed in so many ways. What are they going to do, you know? Albert, this is something that concerns me, all right? As we were talking about over the break, I'm concerned that it might some patriot with a gun might suddenly lose his tether and start a shooting war. In order to try and retake England or something of that nature.
Well,
the war will be among us. But we, of course, anybody of an intellectual sense who's attempting to solve this thing peacefully and rationally, as both you and I are, we understand that the contrary act of violence, basically, you can't use violence unless it's initiated by the other side. In my opinion, you can really only use violence defensively in order to maintain the moral high ground.
Well, in point of fact, I mean, we now know that the House of Commons are so frightened of the people of this country that they actually have, would you believe, 700 fully armed police assigned to the Houses of Parliament.
That's like
Alice of Westminster.
That's just that, like that in is, the start of that, in the end of the movie V for Vendetta, when they had all the soldiers with the guns and stuff like that outside Parliament protecting it from the protests.
Well, that's right. But you see, anybody who goes into the House of Parliament, believe me, anybody who goes in, we have an awful lot of very disgruntled ex-servicemen in this country now. We also have an awful lot of very disgruntled servicemen in this country because they are being sent out to fight wars with less than the best equipment. They are being subjected to cutbacks in manpower, which means that there aren't enough soldiers to do the work that's being asked of them, which means they're not getting the rest and recreation between wars that they should have. So they are becoming overstressed and all the rest of it. And then they get themselves invalided out of the services with post-traumatic stress syndrome. Then the government's cutting them adrift, and we have soldiers basically begging on the streets in this country who are missing arms and legs because the government have cut them adrift. Now, there are a lot of soldiers who've retired from the army who don't have post-traumatic stress syndrome, who don't have lost limbs and all the rest of it, and who are going around, and what they've done is they get together, they have a collection, and then they go around, they sweep their town where they are, any squaddies that they find that are down and out, they pick them up, they book them into a B&B for a month, and then they try and do something to get them on their feet, and that's good. These soldiers have gone past that now, and they're now thinking, well, you know, this is so bad, that government is so bad here that they need taking out. Now, what we're talking about here is soldiers not, you know, from the Royal Corps of Transport and that sort of thing. What we're talking about here is actually frontline fighting soldiers, parachutists from the parachute regiment, Royal Marine Commandos, Brigade of Guards, you know, Royal Green Jackets, which are now known as the Rifles. These are top-line fighting regiments. And these ex-soldiers had a meeting a little while ago, and one of the questions that was asked is, where do we raise the money to go out and buy weaponry? And one of the soldiers present said, well, you know, what are you talking about? We know where the weapons are in this country. We have the skill to go and get them. What do we want money for? And if in fact these people decide to actually do something physical about this and go to war, and I understand that some of them
the state would have no defence against it. So there's an old saying: there is no defence against an inside job. If somebody knows your systems inside and out, you can't resist them. Absolutely, really.
but you see, 700 armed policemen. If they were all on duty at the same time, which they're not, probably only 200 on duty at one time. But if all 700 were on duty at any one time, I would suggest that between 60 and 100 ex-parachutes, ex-Royal Marines, ex-Special Forces, all working together, I would give those police officers a life expectancy of 15 minutes. Because I think that there is... You know, the finest fighting soldiers in the world are the English soldiers. The Americans admit that readily. They love it when we fight alongside them because they know that we're going to do the job for them. And several of their generals have already said, you know, we love it when the British are fighting with us because they're so fucking good.
Well, you can't say that on...
Sorry about that, but... you know, they are so good. And so these blokes are good, and I understand that some of them at the moment are going up into the mountains in the north of England and are training to get themselves into top-line physical fitness in order to do this. But basically, we want to get this done without any shots being fired at all. I do want the politicians to die. There is no doubt in my mind that that is the correct thing to do with them. But I want them arrested. I want them put on trial for their crimes. I want them found guilty of their crimes. And then I want the judge to put the black hat on and to actually sentence them to death by hanging.
Yes.
Because I think that that is the right way to do it. I think their crimes warrant that.
This is my opinion too, that all of the treasonous scum that have basically sold our countries out to these foreign powers and things of that nature, it really is the only true justice for them is to be hung by the neck until dead.
Well, absolutely. And the reason I want this to start in England is because I believe if we start this in England and if we are successful in doing this in England, then I think certainly every single Commonwealth country will follow suit. I think the people of those countries will learn the lesson very quickly and they will follow suit and they will come into line. Once they have come into line, then I think the people in America will come into line and they will do the same with their politicians, because let's be fair about this. This is a worldwide problem with politicians today. This new world order, one world government nonsense, where they want to reduce the world population down to something like, I don't know what it is, 500 million or something, so that the elite can sit in their palaces and their big mansion houses, and there'd be just enough people there to supply the commodities that the elite need to live in comfort. I think that that is an ambition that we have to stop. We cannot allow genocide for any reason whatsoever. I think that the Almighty, when the population of the world gets too big, the Almighty actually comes in with a tsunami or something, and he wipes out several million people, big earthquakes, that sort of thing. I think we leave this to the Almighty to decide who lives and who dies in that respect. I don't think we can hand this over to a few dozen people because I think the top whack of these people is about 300 worldwide. And I don't think we can leave that to them. I think we take them out and we run the thing properly. What we do need to do with the English Parliament, certainly, is we have to get rid of the party political system, because the thing went all wrong with the party political system.
You know, Albert, it's funny you should say that, because just this morning I was thinking about, if I ever wanted to run, would I have a party? And I was like, wait a second, no franking way would I have a party, because parties are all corrupt. People have to belong to the party. Then that person isn't themselves anymore. They're property of the party.
Yeah. Well, this is what's happening over here, of course, because it doesn't matter whether you've got a Labour government or a Tory government over here. The Prime Minister of the day, he makes up his mind what he wants to do, and then he says to the whips, right, make sure everybody toes the line. And then there's all sorts of things like blackmail, promises of promotion, blackmail. If you don't do this, then we're going to tell your wife about the fact that you're having an affair with your secretary, and all this sort of nonsense. So we need to get rid of that. And I think what we do is we say as a country, well, okay, we want politicians, we want members of parliament, but what we're going to do is anybody who wants to run for parliament comes and puts their name in the hat to run for parliament. We will give them, say, a figure of £50,000, and we say to them, that is your money to run your campaign. You can't spend any more than that. We want receipts for all of it, but that is your money. Whoever gets elected to Parliament, we then put them into the Palace of Westminster, and we do what they do with the Pope. When the Pope dies, all the cardinals and archbishops get locked in a room, and then they have to elect one of their member as Pope. And they stay locked in the room until they do it. And what we do is we put our 635 independent members of Parliament in, and we say to them, right, well, you stay in there now until such time as you produce a Prime Minister. Once they've produced a Prime Minister, we say to the Prime Minister, you will pick a cabinet, but we've got too many cabinets. We've got about 60 different cabinets going in this country at the moment. I think that's, two-thirds too many. So I think we say, right, you pick 20 government ministers, and we will reduce the ministries. We'll amalgamate them in where necessary. We'll get rid of them where they're completely superfluous, and there are some, I think, that are. And we just bring it down to manageable levels. And then we give back all of the power, or well, not power. I hate the word power. We give back all of the authority to the Queen that she is entitled to have under the Constitution, because kings and queens of England have never had total control. They've always been limited in what they can do by the Constitution. And Parliament today, they talk about the fact they rule with Henry VIII's powers. The fact of the matter is that Henry VIII's powers were illegal when Henry VIII was alive and was using them. And the only reason he got away with it was because he was an arrogant bully and everybody was frightened of him because he had this nauseating habit
of chopping
people's upsetting, he chopped your head off. Or in the case of Richard Rose, who was upset by the Bishop of Rochester, Richard Rose was his cook. He poisoned the meal, killed 17 people, including, I think, the bishop. The bishop was a friend of Henry VIII's, so Henry VIII, without any trial or anything else, ordered that Richard Rose be taken to Smithfield Market in London, where he was to be boiled alive. And that's what happened to Richard Rose. When Henry VIII did that, when he gave that order, what he was giving was an illegal order. And the people who complied with that order were actually breaking the law of this country. But he was an arrogant bully, and people were frightened of him. And if you weren't frightened of him, and you said, you know, I'm not doing that, it's wrong, like Thomas More did, then you end up on the block. So, you know, Parliament claim today to rule by Henry VIII's powers, which gives you some idea of what they're doing. And in fact, I wrote to them over their new Bill of Rights, and I got a letter back from a Dr. Egan, who was the secretary to an Andrew Dismore, who was the chairman of the Joint Parliamentary House of Lords, House of Commons committee that were working on the Bill of Rights. And Andrew Dismore, in the letter, said to me, you'll be interested in the discussion that's going on at the moment as to whether by passing a bill, Parliament could actually do away with the rule of law. Now, why would you want to even contemplate doing away with the rule of law? Because if you do that, you end up a satanic law. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. And if you do that, it means that when your 14-year-old daughter is dragged off the street by a group of politicians and gang raped, it's not a crime, because there's no law that says it's a crime. When a group of people break into your old mother's house when she's in her 80s or 90s, beat the living daylights out of her and steal everything in the house worth carrying away, it's not a crime, because there's no law that says it's a crime. Why would anybody with more than, well, I was going to say half a brain, but half a brain is far too much. You don't need half a brain to realize that's wrong. You know, without any brain at all, why would anybody contemplate doing away with the rule of law, let alone discussing it in the Mother of Parliaments? How can we do away with the rule of law? I mean, that is just ludicrous. You'd have no police officers, you'd have no courts, because there would be no crime, but people would be subject to murder and rape and mayhem and all sorts of things without any redress whatsoever.
This is the kind of society that is actually wanted and needed by the elite so that it can be maintained forever. And the reason why they want to bring down the population to 500 million is so that they can maintain perpetual dominance over us through use of force alone, if necessary. That is the problem that they have right now, is that at the moment we are too many. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com with Albert. It's the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. The lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and scumbaggery, individuals that happen to be elected by the people whom, on which they commit said scumbaggery, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And isn't it actually, I find it really amusing in some ways, Albert, of how people really do bring it on themselves. Is it schadenfreude to laugh at people who stumble so badly? Barack Obama's going to save me and protect my rights and get our troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. And me and Sarah, we were watching the news last night. Barack Obama was giving a good speech, and he's like talking about how we've got to, you know, take America in the right direction, how we've got to maintain people's rights and sovereignty. And both of us were like, It was. I mean, seriously, it may as well have been somebody doing an impression of Barack Obama. It was that funny and so fake.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are their own worst enemies. I mean, so many people that I talk to, and I talk to lots of people all over the country, and every now and again I get people come up to me and say, oh, of course, it's too late. There's nothing we can do. It's gone too far. And what I say to them is, are you English? And they say, well, yes. And I say, well, you should be damn well ashamed of yourself. You know, the English have a habit of not doing anything till it's too late and then recovering the situation completely. You know, if you're English, the one word we don't understand is can't. You know.
Although there are a lot of can'ts in England.
Well, yes, I know. Well,
down the pub, you know.
Was the word. But the one word we don't understand is can't, because we have a history of doing things which everybody else said we couldn't do. And you know, if you look at our history, time after time after time, we have done things which would be impossible. People would say were impossible. If you asked the bookmakers, William Hill, for example, to give you odds on the Black Prince's army, which was having a wander through France, he had 6,000 men-at-arms, knights and archers with him, and he was confronted with an army of 30,000 with 8,000 German, 30,000 Frenchmen, 8,000 German mercenaries and some Genoese crossbowmen. And if you'd asked William Hill or any other bookmaker to give you odds on the Black Prince winning, you would have not been worth putting a bet on, because the odds would have, well, I mean, it probably would have been worth putting a bet on, because you'd have made a fortune. And you would, in fact, at the end of the day, have made your fortune, because at the end of the day, the English had lost about 400 killed and wounded. The French lost over 15,000. The Germans lost all 8,000 of theirs. And the French lost a considerable number of their Genoese crossbowmen. And we were having to stand, climb over a pile of French and German dead 15 foot high to hack down at the other French on the other side. So, you know, we have a habit of doing things which can't be done. You know, if you'd asked a bookmaker to give you odds on whether or not HMS Glowworm, a small destroyer, would be able to fight its way through five German destroyers, which were the size of our light cruisers, and actually ram the pocket battleship HMS Hipper, pocket battleship Hipper, the bookmakers would have said, no way whatsoever. Glowworm would be blown out of water long before she got to the Hipper. But she actually made it to the Hipper. She actually rammed the Hipper. She released a 30-foot hole in the side of the Hipper, which released all of the Hipper's reserves of fuel oil into the North Sea, and she couldn't complete her mission. So one little English destroyer did what we'd sent out a squadron of destroyers and a flotilla of destroyers and a battleship to do, and one little destroyer did it on her own. And you know, so we have this habit of doing the impossible. And people say to me, of course, you're never going to do this. It won't work. It can't be done. Well, I tell you now, I am English. It can be done. It will be done, because I intend to do the impossible.
And it likewise goes for New Zealanders, because back in the old colonial times, we didn't have no supply routes or nothing. Like, let's say a part breaks down on your tractor, you're going to wait 8 months for another part. So you've got to figure out how to get that tractor working. And
well, absolutely.
It becomes the number eight wire mentality. It's a particular thickness of just wire that you can bend around and shape. And apparently it was used in so many different repair jobs and things like that, that in fact it became a legend in New Zealand as just like the thing for everything. It's like the early modern duct tape, basically. It was what we used to hold everything together when you got nothing.
Yeah.
That's what creativity really is at the end of the day. Not doing what you have, what you can with what you got, but doing what you want to with things you don't even have.
Yeah. Well, this is absolutely right. And you know, the people of New Zealand, the people of Australia, the people of Canada, you know, most of them originated in this country, most of them. And we share the same DNA, we share the same bloodlines and everything else.
And our same westernized, Americanized, anglicized culture and systems, you know.
Well, absolutely. And therefore, you know, I've always said that, you know, If I take the Michael out of the Scots, something chronic, I have to say. But if I was being attacked by an overwhelming force, I'd rather have 10 Scotsmen from a third-rate Scots regiment with me, or 10 New Zealanders or 10 Australians with me, than I would have 500 American Special Forces. Because I'd know damn well that I'd stand a chance of coming out of it alive with those 10 soldiers from those countries. Whereas with the Americans, I'm just as likely to get shot by them.
You know? And the statistics prove that. Not to mention, what was it? Half of them will be on medication of some kind for their current traumatic stress disorder. And the rest of them, how long is boot camp training? Like 6 months, whereas English and New Zealand regiments are like 2 years training before you can even go into a zone?
Well, I don't know how long the training is for the military now, but certainly training in the military is ongoing and constant. Mm. Because, you know, no sooner have you learnt one end of a rifle, then they show you a machine gun. And as soon as you've learnt that, they show you a tank. Mm. And basically, you have to learn everything there is to know about it all.
This reminds me of a great Kiwi invention during the First World War in Gallipoli, when they're all fighting in trenches. They managed to create a periscope rifle.
A few tubes of
PVC piping with or whatever it was they were using with a couple of mirrors through the sight of the rifle, so they had the rifle up there with a trigger mechanism, so they could just sit in the trench and snipe people with a periscope rifle. And it's because of the situations we get ourselves into, we find what it is we need to get out of it. It's kind of like a necessity is the mother of all invention, as they say. Well I'll tell you Albert, what we need today is we need an invention to allow people to free themselves from frickin' tyranny in every single way that matters.
And that's what we're trying to do. And what we're doing is we are saying we have the law. The law is written down. It's in the books. We have the law. The law, English constitutional law, and I dare say it's exactly the same with the New Zealand constitution, the Australian constitution.
We don't even have one to a large degree. People in New Zealand don't even know that we have one.
Well, you will have one because it will be based on our one. So you'll have things like Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights apply in New Zealand as they apply here. Because, you know, they were taken over there by us when we went there. Certainly Magna Carta you will have. But you see, what happens is it doesn't suit government to recognize things like Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights. Because if they recognize Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights, then in point of fact, what they're saying is that, you know, these things stop us doing what we want to do. And what we want to do is oppress the people. And we can't do that if we acknowledge the existence of Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights. So governments simply ignore them. They don't mention them, they ignore them. And when, for example, we have a book. I bought a book on the English Constitution from the government. Not the English Constitution, because they call it, we have an English Constitution and a Scottish Constitution. There is no such thing as a United Kingdom Constitution or a British Constitution. We have an English Constitution which applies in Wales, and the Scots have got their own. And in fact, Scots is older than ours. And so basically, they put out this thing in the thing. And in the beginning of their book, this is, there is nothing.
You want to finish up what you're saying, Albert? We've got a bit.
Yeah. There is nothing written down that says the Queen has to give her consent to a bill if both houses of Parliament pass it. Well, that's a straight lie, because it is written down. So Matthew Hale wrote it in his book of the prerogatives of the king in 1713, and it appears in Blackstone's book on the commentaries on the laws of England.
Okay.
So the government are lying.
Well, governments are lying. What a surprising conclusion, Albert. Thank you very much for your time.
That's right.
Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to join the after the show chat, we'll be starting that in about 5 minutes or so. So you can join the chat room at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, pop in your Skype name, and be part of the conversation that we normally have every day after the show. See you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.